What is going on, everyone? This is Neil back for another episode here. I'm with my buddy Costa Kapothanasis. How'd I do?
Close.
Okay.
Close. It's pretty phonetic. It's Kapothanasis.
Kapothanasis. That sounds a lot more badass than what I said. So appreciate the correction. Costa runs Costa 10 Minute Oil Change, which is a national franchise. I'm super pumped to have Costa on here. He's done really, really big things. So, Costa, thanks so much for taking your time, dude.
Yeah, no, happy to talk to you. I've been following you on Twitter for such a long time and glad we got to do this.
Absolutely, man. Costa, would you mind telling everyone a little bit about who you are, your background, and kind of what you're doing now?
Yeah, so as Neil said, I run a oil change business. It's one of those fun questions when you meet people, what do you do? And I like to tell people I change oil for a living, but... I started off in finance around, graduated college in 2010, around the time of the Great Recession, when it was pretty difficult to find decent work. And I worked my way through a few investment firms, started off in retail banking with TD Bank and then TD Ameritrade with brokerage and then Merrill Lynch with their financial advisor program. And lastly, T. Rowe Price and their asset management team. And I worked a lot with small business owners, and I've always had a entrepreneurial streak myself as a kid, you know, selling N64 games and figuring out which games you could keep from Blockbuster. That would be a better vig between the return, the no return fee and how much you could sell it for and things
Dude,
like that.
Dude, my parents had video rental stores. I don't take that lightly.
Yeah, I've had that side of me for a long time. And so. While I was at T. Rowe Price, you know, really good job, pretty invested in my career, had several securities licenses, but I always had that nagging itch to start something of my own that I could build. When you work within large bureaucracies like financial institutions, it's hard to make an impact on those organizations. And so to have my own business was a way of me having control over something that I could build myself. And so I started looking at different types of businesses while I was at T. Rowe Price. And what I wanted to do was something that was manager-centric, but not skilled manager-centric. And what I mean by that is an example that I use a lot is the food business. And I'm a first-generation American. I come from a Greek family, you know, owned many diners. Cousins ran the diners, uncles, aunts. And when you have that level of family helping out with the business, anyone who has been in a family business, you know that like that's someone you can trust. And when you get to these businesses where you have skilled employees that could really hold the business hostage, for lack of a better term, you know, it's not something I wanted to do while maintaining my job at T. Rowe Price. I didn't want to have someone know that I was not able to step in and run the business. So it was important for me to find a business that, what kind of continuity does the business have on the day when the manager is not there? And so the example I like to give is the pizzeria. Like if the only person who knows how to toss dough calls out, what do? Right. If no one else can toss dough, you got to shut it down. And so for me, looking at businesses where there was continuity on the manager's day off was really important. And so I found a quick lube in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, that the owners were just, you know, kind of, so beginning of the silver tsunami in 2014, where a lot of people are just retiring with no real exit plan. And, you know, they held a 100% seller note for me, a very small deposit on it, and basically took over the business and was able to implement my thoughts on how the industry should go. And so,
Costa, did you quit your corporate career at that point, or this was as a side hustle when you started?
I did not. I actually ended up, this is now public. I ended up getting fired by T. Rowe Price because when you're a registered investment advisor, you have what's called a U-10, and they viewed the business as an investment, and T. Rowe Price was not happy that I didn't disclose it on my U-10.
That's ridiculous.
They let me go after 4 months of running the business. And it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me.
I bet, right? So you took this over, and I'm guessing this was like a very standard oil change or quick lube type of place. And from there, you probably transformed it to what the Costa process is now, right? Can you tell us how that process went?
Yeah. So those first 4 months while I was still at T Row, I spent a lot of time on Yelp because Yelp was still relevant then for getting consumer feedback. And I was looking at competitors' reviews and what were some of the things that were causing people problems? What were some of the issues that our space had? And what that did was it really allowed me to, being an outsider coming into this industry, never having been in it, I got to implement my views of what it should be from kind of a naive perspective, where the feedback I was seeing was a lot of things like, we don't want to be sold something we don't need. We don't want to be taken advantage of. We're only coming in here for an oil change. We don't want to be sitting behind someone who's getting tires done, and now my lunch break is over and I didn't get my service done. And so for me, our North Star became very quickly the oil change only model, which is something that our entire industry has gotten away from. And then about a year later, after I opened Harrisburg, after kind of making my model what I thought it should be, I got the opportunity to validate the model in a town called Dillsburg, Pennsylvania, which is a town of 6,000 people, which, you know, you're in LA, you could walk out to the street and throw a rock and hit 6,000 people. And, you know, so Dillsburg, Pennsylvania was really a test of the model because it wasn't a big town, and it went really well. And then the third store that we opened was in the Chicago market. And that was really the true test of, you know, I'm in Baltimore, this store is in Chicago. This is now 2016, so it's not like we're not as app heavy as we are now then. And so we're putting procedures in place. We're putting, you know, third party processes in place and partners to try to run this business. And so very early on in the DNA of our business, we built it around this kind of absentee ownership because there was no way for me to be in Chicago on a regular basis.
Right. Kosta, can I ask you, what was your goal with doing this? So like you bought this on the side of the first business with the seller note, you had your job, you had your daytime job, and you didn't know you were going to get fired at that time. Was the goal just like, hey, I want to make some side income and do that? Like, why did you start this to begin with?
Yeah, it started solely because I just wanted to scratch that entrepreneurial itch. You know, I had my Series 7, 63, 66. I was the variable annuity specialist at T. Rowe Price, and I dealt a lot with self-employed folks that had different types of self-employed retirement plans, like individual 401ks, and it was a really nice job. And this is coming out of 2010, when it was really difficult to get a job. And I know my in-laws appreciated that I finally – they weren't my in-laws then. It was just my girlfriend's parents, but she's now my wife. And they appreciated at the time getting a stable job like T. Rowe Price. Yeah. And so weren't thrilled to see me get into the oil change business after kind of the difficulty of getting from retail banking to asset management was a lot. And my parents are the same way. Like, you know, Neil, I don't know what, you know, what your parents are like. But for me, immigrant parents, the key to prosperity has always been education. And you know, don't do it the way we did it. We want something different for you. So my parents were like horrified when I started my own business. They're like, "What? You're in finance and you have a MBA. Why are you starting a business?" And
did your parents have their own business too?
Of course.
Yeah, I think we have the same story too. My parents had their own businesses, and I had my private equity career. And they're like, "Wait, it's stable. Like, it's in finance. Why would you ever quit that to start a cleaning company?" Same thing, right? They want stability for you because that's not what they had.
Because that's what they worry about is the stability side of it. But, you know, my mom texts me all the time. She's like, "Aren't you glad that you took the jump?" And I was like, "Oh, I was kind of pushed out, but
yeah." I'll take that, Mom. Thank you. Kosta, when you started and maybe even opened up your second location, did you know you wanted to do franchising?
No, actually the opposite. I had a video go viral within the Quick Lube community that was a Facebook ad back when it was Facebook dark posts, and it was entitled "We Are a Small Business, We Are Not a Franchise." That was the title. And my branding and my marketing was so far beyond what some of the local businesses had done that there was this misconception that it wasn't like locally owned. It was this misconception that we were this large out of state oil change business.
Yeah.
And we had such buttoned up branding from day one that I put out that video in 20, 17, I forgot that it was like in my system somewhere, and it took a franchisee finding it like years later to for me to get rid of it. But it really stemmed around, you know, that branding side of it. But I had always, I paid a lot of attention to the other players in our space, and just, you know, obviously Jiffy Lube is the biggest name in our space, and they started franchising around 1980, and their franchise agreements are 20-year agreements. And so I had this big, like, idea that in 2020, when all of these second-time renewals were going to be dropping off, I was just going to pick here and pick here, and I was going to get all these facilities because all these Jiffy Lube franchisees would be not renewing because they've put their 40 years in. They've made a lot of money because the heyday of the Quick Lube was when they were running things. And that's actually exactly what happened, with one little twist. I miscalculated the landlord's appetite for sitting on expensive leases. And so when these landlords now have vacant Quick Lube buildings, and I'm in a Quick Lube building right now, and there's holes in the floor, and you know, the ceilings aren't super high. You can't really put lifts in here. There's only one use for these buildings.
Yeah.
And I thought these landlords were going to be like, okay, we got to get someone in here, or else, you know, what are we going to do with this building? They were so used to cashing, you know, those Jiffy Lube checks over the years that they were like, you know what, we'll wait until someone pays our price. And because my model reverted to the basically original Quick Lube model, which is the oil change only model, you know, I wasn't in a position to be signing $10,000 a month leases. And so then the problem became tackling the building. And so that's when I said, okay, now this is something that's very capital intensive. Franchising might be the best way to do this. But before we launched as a franchise, what was important to me was, can we get this building done for a price that allows us to do the oil change only model? We opened two stores in 2020. One called in Westlake, Ohio, and Menor on the Lake, Ohio. They're beautiful buildings, and they proved the model out for us. We launched as a franchise in February of 2021, and the model really resonated with our franchisees and took off from there.
So how many franchisees are you at now?
We are at 58 franchisees, 163 territories between those 58 franchisees.
Jeez, man. I love it. One thing, Costa, like whenever you and I were messaging on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, and you were kind of giving me advice about what to do in the franchise world, something I've always like kind of admired about you is how big you think, right? You're like, oh, we put this investment, we created the org chart, and now we have like 150 territories sold in 2 years, which is insane, by the way. Like that's such massive growth. I guess I don't even know how to ask the question, but like, how did that develop? For a lot of people listening, they might think, hey, I'm just trying to get my business started, or I'm just in my 9-to-5, I'm trying to get out. And now you have this kind of empire. Like, how did that thinking develop to what it is right now, where I feel like you have very big thinking and I think it's very admirable. How does that develop?
Yeah. So it all starts with belief in the mission that you're trying to accomplish. And so for me, we hold what's called a discovery day, which is a day for potential franchisees to come in and kind of see our secret sauce. And the first thought exercise I do with everyone in the room is I ask them, when I say fast food, what do you say? And for quite some time, it was probably 70% McDonald's with 30% Chick-fil-A. And then about, you know, 9 months ago, it was probably 50-50 Chick-fil-A, McDonald's. And even more recently, now it's, you know, McDonald's is a minority, and then you get Chick-fil-A, and then you get Raising Cane's. And so the purpose of me doing that thought exercise is I then open up to the room and I say, there is no brand that is too big where you cannot get top of mind brand awareness. If you execute on the model, if you believe in the model and you execute on that model, you can get top of mind brand awareness. So it doesn't matter what companies have a 40-year head start from us. If we can execute on our model and do the things really well that we know that the customers want, then it doesn't matter who was before us. It doesn't matter what percentage of cars on the road are electric vehicles. If we have a larger piece of that pie because we're doing things right and people think of us first, then we're going to succeed. Now, you have to believe that. You can't just say that and mm-hmm. hope for it. And so, you know, when we set out to franchise, we wanted to take a half organic approach, half broker approach. And for those of your listeners who aren't familiar with the different ways to sell franchises, you know, franchise sales has this underbelly to it called the broker system, which is, you know, this system of franchise consultants who steer people towards different brands. Mm-hmm. And the best way to not get sucked into the broker system is to be undeniable. Because a lot of the times and a lot of the reputation of the franchise community comes that franchise consultants are only going to sell franchises to their buddies who maybe they have some shadow equity in the business, or these brokers are going to sell it to whoever is giving them the biggest commission. Mm-hmm. The easiest way to overcome this is, one, stand by your principles, right? So during discovery day, I tell people this is a 15-year agreement. Our franchise agreement is a 15-year agreement. That's longer than the average marriage in America these days, right? And so you get a laugh from everyone in the room. But then we say, you want to do business with people you want to do business with, and we're evaluating you the same way you're evaluating us. And if we feel as though this is not going to be a good partnership, we're not going to award the territory. And so one thing I was very proud of, despite the hundreds of people we've put through our discovery days, we were one of the few emerging brands in 2021 that was not, you know, rubber stamping every single person who came through our discovery day. Because if you sell 300 units and can only get 50 of them open, that doesn't do anybody any good.
Right.
And I think that if you're familiar with the Burger IM situation, like that's case in point right there.
Yep. And for what Costa's talking about, for anyone listening, is when a lot of franchises, if you look at them, they say we have this many territories sold, which is kind of a misleading number, because the real question is how many territories are open. Now, certain models which have real estate and stuff attached to them, it's not 100% hit rate for the territories that actually open. So that's a bigger number to check out, as opposed to just how many territories are sold by themselves. Costa, question for you. With you developing this model, getting the franchising, like, did you have a vision at the beginning saying, I want to award 150, 300 territories? Or was your vision just, I want to be better than the current competition and I feel like I have the capability of doing it, let me go after it? What inspired you to grow this way?
It really was, I want to award territories to people who I want to do business with. And it turns out that when your values align with other people's, there's a lot of people that you're willing to do business with, and a lot of people want to do business with you.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have our core values, and, you know, our core values permeate into every part of our business, from hiring to firing to vendors to franchisees. And so the core values to us are kind of that very base level of getting these people to understand, like, this is how we have to run our business. And the oil change business has a ramp up period. It has what's called a ramp up period because it's an interval based business. It's not like Raising Cane's, where their grand opening week, someone might eat there five times in the same week.
Yeah.
Every car that comes through our door, that car is not coming back for 3 to 6 months. And so we need people in our system who are okay with that deferred gratification and that delayed gratification. And so by making sure that, you know, it wasn't a number, I did jokingly say to my wife at the time, it was the big thing on Twitter. I said, if we sell 50 units, we're moving to Miami with all the other big companies moving to Miami. And then we sold 50 units and I was like, we're not moving to Miami. I'm sorry. And my employees were like, not happy that I went back on that, but yeah. I couldn't get the attention of the mayor. I wasn't big enough yet, maybe now, but yeah, there was never a number in mind. It was more, what are some markets? So another part of franchising that the franchisor does have control over in a sense, but in a sense you don't have control over, is if you do use a broker system, you know, your lead flows can come from anywhere. Our first franchisee to open was Mesa, Arizona. And so that's the other side of the country to us.
Yep.
And he's one of our best franchisees. And so there was no rhyme or reason to that, other than that just so happened to be how the die fell. And so We've started to fill out markets now, and now that we've sold as many units as we sold, we're much more strategic about picking markets, especially with the real estate climate. You know, we still need numbers to fit our model. We can't just say yes to everything in Austin, Texas when, you know, every piece of parcel is being oversold right now.
Absolutely. Costa, I do want to talk about your YouTube channel. And I'm not sure how much time or attention you put into it, but what I think is really cool about what you're doing versus a lot of franchise brands is everything you record on Zoom, whether it's a town hall meeting to your franchisees or whatever training videos for them, you actually post it on your guys' YouTube channel. Is that correct?
Yeah, I break all the rules of franchising. Like, we have a Slack for all our franchisees, and like, you know, I've got some pretty experienced people in our team, like, you know, Driven Brands folks from Amco and Meineke from before they were known as national brands. And like, they're like, yo, you don't want franchisees to be able to talk to each other. They're going to, they're going to start, you know, and I'm like, why? I was like, it never made sense. I get the utility of it, but at the same time, I think the upside, and that's always, I mean, straight out of the Gary V playbook is like, give all your best stuff away, because one, most people are not going to act on it. And two, if you provide value to as many people as possible, the return on it's going to be better. So, you know, we have a Slack channel that all our franchisees are in. I let them talk to my corporate employees. We put everything on YouTube. So there's no, you know, my franchise attorney, is like, why are you putting Discovery Day on YouTube? And it's like, you know, there's nothing super proprietary about what we do. We just, we stick to the model, and there are some, you know, there are some secret sauce pieces, but like, I don't see anyone out there trying to do it. I don't think anyone is out there doing it. And, we're in a pretty mature space. And so I'd be aware if there was another, you know, young player in this space trying to do it. We're not like Take Five or Valvoline or Jiffy Lube. So I'm not concerned with that. And I think the value it adds, whether it's the training videos, you know, we have a website called oilu.org, which is our internal training website for both franchisees and for my corporate employees. And I get the email every time someone registers on it, because you do have to register on the website in order to see the actual training modules. And I'll see like competitors down the street from one of our store will literally use their work email to sign up for the website. And it's like, you know, I try not to have a scarcity mindset when it comes to this thing.
I mean, the reality is, and by the way, I'm doing the same now, because I feel like if I was to bet, Costa, people who are evaluating your franchise, go to YouTube, type in Costa Oil Change and see all of the content you're posting on, you probably will have closed way more people just because of your transparency as opposed to creating competitors, right? People just trust you because they see all your stuff, they vibe with you. Like even this podcast, for example, I know people who have been considering franchising listen to a bunch of podcasts. They go on YouTube and type in stuff, and I'm not even posting on YouTube yet, but I realize people are everywhere. They just want to know about the brand before they even reach out to you to begin with. And what I've realized, exactly what you said from the Gary V playbook, is information is cheap. Like, I feel like the old school franchise way is like, hey, this like ops manual, which I have in my hand, like this is the key of everything. And like, you get access to this and all the information's everywhere. Like, it's just the internet, right? So the information part isn't the secret sauce anymore.
It's commoditized.
Anyone can figure it out. Yeah, it's commoditized. The proprietary part for us, at least, and I think it's different for different franchise brands, is the support system. So someone wants to copy all the playbooks, copy it. But like, unless you could execute it, unless you could have the support system, the checklist isn't doing anything for you. It's a very small percent of people who could actually take it and fully run with it. And you're totally right. I think it's just like, I didn't realize how old school franchises are, where they even advise you not to create a Slack channel with other franchisees. I'm like, that makes no sense at all. But you're right. Like, these are just dinosaurs, and that's the old way of thinking.
Yeah. And they're just so paralyzed by potential liability. And they're like, well, you know, if you put those videos and you say one thing and do something else, and it's like, you know, things change. We go through lumber crises. We go through supply chain crises. We go through interest rate. Like, things change. Like, things will change. I will have said something in 2020 that's not applicable today. Yeah. But that journey being documented is going to lead us to have complete transparency into anyone who's coming into our system knows what we're about. And they're not going to you know, if they want to do the services other than oil changes, by the time they've gone through a couple of videos, they know that's not us then. Then they need to look at someone else.
Absolutely.
And so for us, I think it's almost like it helps with liability, because at any given point in time, you understand where our head is at and how we're looking at things.
Yeah.
But the YouTube channel, to your point, you mentioned support, and that's like, if anyone on this podcast ever is considered franchising their business, you know, you're going to hear a lot about support, and it cannot be overstated. It's literally the most important thing you can do in a franchise system is offer support, which is why we had the Slack channel. It's why I started the YouTube channel, the YouTube videos for the franchisees was, let's create a library of resources for if someone can't pick up the phone, if we don't have the capitalization of a large oil company and our back office staff might be 10 people instead of 50 people. And, you know, if we're not using some of these tools that I think a lot of franchises use, like, I don't want to name them, but you can hire call services that, you know, that I think it's an illusion of support for the sake of saying you have support. Whereas getting the information from the internal team as opposed to an outsourced team is actual support. And so that's how a lot of the library started. And then it just became a thing for, you know, it obviously built up rapidly over the past couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll definitely link to the YouTube channel in the show notes as well, so anyone could check it out and see what Costa's posting here. Costa, thanks so much for hopping on, dude. If anyone wants to learn more about you or Costa Oil, where can they go?
Franchise.costaoils.com for information on the franchising system. If you want to look at our YouTube channel, again, it has everything you could ever want to know about my views on this business.
Awesome. That'll be in the show notes as well. Thanks so much, Costa. Awesome having you on.
Hey, good night.